What's up? Hello, future casters. Thank you for tuning in to yet another episode of Past, Present, Future Cast. I am your host, Maria Elena Pakulis. And oh my gosh, it has been a wild couple of weeks for me personally and for Tucson, where I live, my community as a whole. If you are from Tucson and want to hear all about the local drama and see how you can join in the fight to push back against the gentrification and Scottsdaleification of our downtown, go check out my Instagram, Persephonic777. I'm doing a ton of campaigning and social organizing and activism, I guess, over there. I've been on the news twice in the last 2 to 3 weeks. It's been wild. It's been crazy, but I don't want to take a ton of time to talk about that here. Again, you can find out more on my Instagram. I also did a little write-up a couple weeks ago on the Patreon to talk about just the first couple days of what happened and how it really aligned with a very intense astrological transit that we had going on. So you can read about that at patreon.com/persephonic. But that's neither here nor there, unrelated to this episode. But all of those happenings kind of took away from me being able to promote the last episode of this podcast, which I was so excited about, my interview with Frank Lawrence, the creator of Vibrating Tarot. Please go check that out if you're listening to this one, because it was an incredible episode, incredible interview, and an incredible project that we were talking about. And as a reminder, there is still time to back the Vibrating Tarot crowdfunding campaign on BackerKit. If you are interested in tarot, if you are interested in pleasure products, sexual wellness, adult toys, I highly, highly recommend checking out this project. You can go to vibratingtarot.com and it'll route you straight to the crowdfunding campaign. The campaign has reached its goal and a stretch goal, so we're definitely getting the cards. I'm so excited to get my deck. But remember that you can go to, again, my Patreon that I just mentioned, patreon.com/persephonic. And there is a discount code. So if you want 20% off your Vibrating Tarot deck, go use that code and you'll get a little bit of a deal that Frank was so generous in giving us. Now, talking about this week's episode, the upcoming interview, I am so excited to bring you this interview with the one and only Marcella Kroll. Marcella Kroll is an author and a deck creator, and we're going to talk all about that in this week's interview. But since Marcella is a deck creator and I just picked up her Sacred Symbols Oracle deck, I thought that I would pull a card from this deck for our card of the episode. So we're moving away from tarot. We're not pulling a tarot card this week per usual. We'll talk lots about tarot when we get into this interview, but I pulled an oracle card for us today. And for those who don't know, the difference between a tarot deck and an oracle deck is as follows. Both are cardomancy decks, decks meant to be used for divination, for self-exploration, for asking questions and receiving answers. A tarot deck is a very specific format. It's 78 cards. Sometimes individual deck creators will add an extra card or two here or there. I think Vibrating Tarot actually is going to be an 80-card deck. But traditionally, a tarot deck is 78 cards divided into two unequal halves. There's the major arcana, which is numbered 0 through 21. So it's 22 cards in the major arcana. And then there's the minor arcana, which is divided into four suits, similar to a standard deck of playing cards. In tarot, those suits are traditionally pentacles, cups, wands, and swords, but different deck makers will give them different names, different titles. However, they always relate to the four elements: earth, air, fire, and water. An oracle deck can be used in a similar way as a tarot deck, but an oracle deck, its structure is much more freeform. So it doesn't have this set structure. It can be any structure, any format that the deck creator comes up with. So the Sacred Symbols Oracle deck, which I'm going to be pulling a card for us here in a moment, is a 50-card oracle deck with a guidebook. So it's 50 cards. Each one has a symbol on it, and then each card is numbered, and there's a little guide to what the symbol means inside of the guidebook. So for this episode, I'm just going to show you the symbol, talk about the card that we pulled, and read what is in the guidebook that Marcella wrote. So our card from the Sacred Symbols Oracle deck is number 22, Grounded. Title of this card is Grounded, and the symbol is an anchor. This is actually the second time I've pulled this card today. I was pulling cards from this oracle deck this morning as I sat out in the garden, and this was the second card of the two that I pulled, Grounded. So I'm hearing this message. I'm taking it in. I definitely understand that I need some grounding now, especially after this wild, wild month of May. From the guidebook, Marcella writes, "Have you been feeling spacey, confused, or unable to focus? Drawing this card means your energy is scattered or you are not fully connected to your body. Time to reconnect with your physical body and its connection to the earth. Meditation, being outdoors, movement, and root vegetables can all help you feel more grounded. The symbol is an anchor. The anchor is a sailor's best friend when the sailor wants to stay put for a while." Like I said, I am hearing this message. Truth be told, when I sat in the garden this morning with the intention of watering the plants and pulling some cards, I was on my phone the whole time. I was scrolling yet again. There's been lots of scrolling as so much of the community organizing I've been doing has been on social media. The sharing the messages, talking to others about what we're organizing has all been happening on social media. So I see how this message is relevant to me, and perhaps it's relevant to you too. So maybe you can join me in making a commitment in the next couple of weeks to spend some more time really rooting into the body, stretching, movement, exercising, getting really present, tuning into your senses. What can you see, feel, taste, smell? And yeah, just getting really grounded. Bare feet on the ground is always a good way to do that. So I hope you join me in grounding in these next couple of weeks, and perhaps consider picking up the Sacred Symbols Oracle deck for yourself. I got mine at Nexus. You'll hear me shout Nexus out in this episode as well, because they also carry Marcella's books. But there's lots of places that you can find these books, these oracle decks, or ways to ground outside of tools. So I really don't have much else to share this week, except go check out the previous episodes of this podcast. I think they're awesome and worth a listen. And yeah, I hope you enjoy this interview. If you do, please subscribe to this episode. I'll be bringing you more awesome interviews every other week. And without further ado, here's my interview with Marcella Kroll. All right. Hello and welcome. I am here with Marcella Kroll, who is an artist and occultist, as well as an author and deck creator. And I'm so excited to be speaking with you here today. Welcome, Marcella.
Thank you for having me. I'm glad to be here.
So you just had a new book come out. When did that release?
February 11th.
February 11th. Yes. So by the time this airs, it'll be a few months ago, but Healing the Liminal, is this your first book that's come out?
I would say it's my second published book, but it's the first one of this kind of nature, this personal. I have a couple of zines. Cutting the Cord was a zine I made in 2015. Very simple, you know, kind of easy access to cord cutting and supporting, clearing your energy. And then a children's, well, Priestess was my illustrated grimoire that came out with Not Occult Media in 2019. The children's book I self-published in 2020, Lily's Walk. And I have a zine called A Psychic Self-Defense Zine that I put out this year, 2024, at the end of 2024, as a companion to a psychic self-defense class that I teach. But then Healing the Liminal was put out through Union Square Publishing. Some people know them as Sterling. They just got acquired by Hachette, though. So a lot of those publishing houses are shifting hands.
Interesting. Yeah.
Yes. It's a whole world.
I can only
imagine. I self-published
imagine.
For close to a decade and then started moving into the actual publishing world, which is a completely different. You know, there are pros and cons to both.
As is the case with most things. And you have
Yes.
a few decks out as well. Did you self-publish those?
So I self-published three of my decks. Well, I have, how many decks do I have now? So I have three oracles and one tarot. And I had self-published them all until I went into a contract with Union Square and we reissued them. So they are now mass produced. But yeah, I did that. I started self-publishing decks, my first deck in 2013. Sacred Symbols was my first deck, the first incarnation of it. It's now in its fourth incarnation.
Wow, that's incredible. What have you found? Because that's interesting to hear that it's in its fourth incarnation. Mm-hmm. What do you find that you are drawn to change, or why are you drawn to change certain things?
Yeah, I mean, the first edition and the second edition, which was really like mirrors very closely what it originally looked like. Time, opportunity, knowing better, you know, like the just like people can grow and evolve. I think our tools should as well. And, you know, once you know better, you do better. At least you try. So in an effort to honor and not be appropriative or really create this deeper level of education around the symbols that were being presented, I wanted to really, you know, honor that and again, grow and do better and show people. We live in a world that is really quick to cancel people for not knowing certain things, or, you know, give people a chance to amend or readjust. And I'm a big person in amending and readjusting. I've done a lot of things on my own without any instruction. So you're bound to make mistakes. And I say a lot to people, don't do what I say just because I'm perfect. I mess up a lot. And that is how I learn. And that's how I grow. And I do it very publicly. So, and also I changed a lot during the windows and time. It was really important for me by the third edition of Sacred Symbols. I had gotten sober at that point, and I also found my biological father, so I had found more about my lineage, which I did not know anything about, my paternal side, even though I knew, like, I had a vague understanding, but really still no information. So there's this process of, I was like, I redrew the whole thing by hand, like, and, you know, I had drawn the first and second edition by hand too, but I had edited it in an iPhone 3, like, which was amazing. Like, that I did all the graphic, like the design in an iPhone 3 app. And then I was like, you know what? I hand drew everything for the third edition. And then I had committed to the fourth edition because I wanted to change a couple of the cards because I felt like there needs to be more representation and there needs to be something shifted. And I couldn't verify a particular symbol after a particular period of time. And I thought there was another symbol that wanted to be present. So I have committed to doing the fourth edition when I got approached by the publisher. And they asked me, what are you working on? And I said, this is what I want. I'm doing it with or without you, essentially. And yeah, that was the thing that got all the other decks picked up as well.
That's really cool. I like that story. In one of my, it won't be recent at the time of this coming out, but at the time of our recording, in one of my recent episodes, I'd sat down to really outline my personal values, because I think that's important in this current day and age and just in general. And one of the values that I landed upon that I feel most strongly connected to is mutability and the right to change, and the right to always shift and adjust. So I love that you can kind of track some of your progression as an individual, as a practitioner, as an artist, as a creative, through the many editions of just one deck.
Thank you. Yeah, it felt really important. And also, like, I taught tarot for teens for 14 years with the Los Angeles Public Library. And, like, I think about teaching kids and how Would we chastise them the way we do adults? Yes, obviously there are things that are done. Sometimes people make mistakes or they do things maliciously. But like, would you ever, you know, someone's got to make the mistake before you, you know, like, and either you're a person who learns by watching or you're a person who learns by doing. And, I've always been the person that's learned by doing because I'm usually the one that's like, oh, I want to look at that and other people are scared. You know, it's like, I mean, it's just been like that my whole life. Curiosity has always, I would say, like outweighed my fear. You know, I'd be scared, but I'd be more curious. Like, what would happen if I did it? You know, it would kill me to like not know, you know. But it's been like that with everything, with my practice, with my work. I mean, my whole life has, and in my art as well.
You mentioned your sobriety, that you got sober during some of the reworkings of this deck. And your book talks a lot about that journey for you. Mm-hmm. So what would you say, looking back, looking at your past, what would you say are some of the origins of your practice and how is that shifted and developed and shifted and changed as you've grown over the years?
I mean, there's so many layers and things to say. I mean, in bite-sized moments, I've always been someone who is interested in the unseen. And like, even as a little girl, I would like go to the church up the street or to I had lived in a pretty diverse neighborhood and everyone had a different religion or faith. And I'd be like, can I come over? Like, and can I go to your temple? Can I go to your Bible study? Can I go to your services? Can I go to your ceremony? Because I was always finding more peace with spirit than I was with people. So, and I grew up in a pretty intense and chaotic home. And I would like, that's why I would walk up the street to the church. Like there's a Catholic church and a Protestant church right next to each other. And I would just go whichever one I could go in and sit because I love the smell. I love the simplicity of being. And I would see things when I was little. The adults, of course, would like chastise and shame. It wasn't till in my early 40s that I found out that like my biological father, my biological grandmother, you know, and her mother were able to see things or and even punished for them. And even my grandmother was a tarot reader at Woodstock. I didn't grow up with any of this information. So I feel like there was this mix of knowing on an intuitive level, you know, and even on my mom's side, because I spent a lot of time with my Italian grandmother, like her sisters would be very like old school, like they were, you know, segnatore, genare, like but they were Americans now. So they didn't want to, they kind of squished a lot of that stuff, you know. I remember in my early, my early 20s, my great aunt, you know, she would do malokia, like, which is like removing the evil eye, but they would very specific tradition of doing it on Christmas Eve. And they're supposed to impart it, you know, on the next generation, but they'd be like, no, you don't want to know this. So you just kind of like dissuade yourself. What really brought me back around to things, because I really shut down from like 8 years old until my teens, I started really heavily self-medicating through drugs and alcohol. I just assumed I was crazy. I thought I was schizophrenic. It was the 90s, you know, you'd be like, should I go into a mental institution? Or I'm going to go to a rave or I'm going to go do this and make art. And I never planned on living, honestly. Like I never thought about that. And I actually had a near-death experience. I overdosed and I went back. I went to astrology and tarot. I couldn't hang out with the people I was hanging out with anymore. I wanted to know why I was like this and I needed something to do in treatment. So I started like fooling around with learning how to cast my own, what is my chart? And I always said, I'm not an astrologer. I love to play around with it though. And then my stepfather's mother gave me a deck of tarot cards. And, you know, I grew up in New England. It was still like, people were still like witch burning country, like in this way of that's freaky, that's weird. We don't want you to, you know. So I had double life going for a while. And then I just would like, I worked retail a lot. I worked in an arts community. I did artist residencies. I moved to New York at my Saturn return before people knew what a Saturn return was. Nobody told me what a Saturn return was. I thought I was dying every day. And then I was like, I got to get out of New York. And I moved to LA. And I had been doing kind of readings here and there begrudgingly for people by recommendation. And it just was like never something I thought of as I was going to do this for work. That's the other thing. People really like look to do this. I was never looking to do this for work. It was means of survival. And, you know, long story short, I lost my bougie fashion job. I got fired for the first and only time I've been fired for a job. I got told I wasn't the right vibe anymore. This is very LA. Because I'm like, there's so many things. I can see in hindsight, you know, but it was the thing that propelled me. It propelled me into houselessness. It propelled me into having to do readings for meals. It propelled me into going, I don't know how to do anything else. And then I'd be working as a barista in the morning, which I'm not a customer service person, like, at all. I mean, even though, like, it used to be comical because, like, I used to temp bar. I, you know, I'd make coffee. I'd do all this stuff. But I was just, like, snarky and kind of like, whatever. Like, I don't care. And then I would go do readings at night, you know. And then it gradually got to the point where, you know, in 2008, I was just like, I don't know how long I can do this for. And then in 2009, I filed bankruptcy and I went full time doing readings. And everyone was like, are you insane? You need to get a job. And I was like, I don't know why, but I need to try. Like, nothing else is working. And even still, I still didn't feel like, oh, I'm supposed to be doing this. The imposter syndrome of what am I even doing here? How is this even going to happen? Like, keep going. It didn't really shift until I made my first deck, because then I was able to bring together the spirit connection, but then also my love of art and creation. That was when it shifted, really, for me in terms of the work. And, you know, I didn't have mentors. I had sometimes people that I would come to contact with. I had books. I had, you know, I had the lovely experience of sitting with Don Miguel Ruiz and Don Jose Ruiz and doing their Toltec angel training. And I worked in a metaphysical bookstore in Venice, so I met a lot of really amazing people. I got to sit with Dr. Brian Weiss, you know, from his Many Lives, Many Masters. A lot of people know him from that work, you know, and I've gotten to sit with some really incredible people and count them as teachers, but never in a traditional path or lineage. But I also equate that to, I am such a interdimensional and multi person. I don't fit into a pathway. And even when I did find my biological father and found like my roots through there, reaching out to those lineages and not being like accepted, I think that's why this book has come through, because there are so many people that also are under the same plight. You know, they want to connect, they want to heal, they want to work with their ancestors, but there's a lot of roadblocks or things that have said you can't or you can't do it respectfully. And I disagree with that.
One of the things that I really loved in listening to your book, because I will say for the listeners, I listened to it on audiobook, so that's why I didn't say I read the book, but I listened to it, was how you encouraged folks to work with and maybe understand isn't the right word, but at least include, acknowledge all of our ancestors and all of the aspects that have come together to create us. You are such a liminal person, and so many people also are. The book absolutely feels like a love letter to those who exist at maybe uncomfortable intersections sometimes.
Yes, absolutely. It's so painful to try to fit in. It really is. Like, I've tried it. I went through so much suffering trying to fit. It would not last. Like, even if I could pull it off for a little while, I was always like off. Be like, you know, I think about like, I see like these kind of NPC things or things where it's like, what is happening here? Like, there's something disconnected, and that's what it was, you know, like, And especially when you have it within your own family or, you know, or even your communities you're trying to connect to. That's why I talk about a lot of it. Like, you know, I even have a small section in the book about, like, you know, cliques, community and collectives and like the differences and how we mislabel things sometimes, you know. And I wasn't seeing anything out there that felt like was for me in terms of finding these liminal spaces. Like the word liminal is super trendy right now, I feel. Just like a lot of things get like a buzzword, but people that actually live in the liminal, you can find bits of yourself in everything, but you don't fully feel like it's okay to have them exist simultaneously with each other. And I think that's where I want this book to be supportive.
So the two cards that we've had come up for your past here, they're both in the Minor Arcana, and the numbers, I feel like, are two very liminal numbers. So we have the Five of Wands coming up.
That friggin' card. Okay, yeah.
Okay. When I saw it, I was immediately like flashing back to different parts in your book that you wrote about. You know, you did have a traumatic childhood, a very conflict-ridden childhood. And it seemed like that followed you for quite a bit of time, where a lot of fire present in your life, in your field, in your aura, but it was not necessarily, it was maybe a little directionless for a long time. Would you agree with that?
Oh, yeah. There was absolutely no direction. The only direction was, how do I get out of here?
How do I get away from this?
Yeah, but like in every aspect, I mean, like, you know, like to the point of even like, you know, unsubscribe from life, you know, like there was like, it was battle before I got out of the womb, you know, like, so that five, that's why I left that five, the Five of Wands has been a consistent theme. But I have South Node in Aries. I'm like, you know, like,
me
I'm
too.
Just like, yeah. Do you?
Me okay, too, yeah. Directly on my ascendant.
Okay, mine's directly on my Venus.
Okay.
Yeah.
Aries Venus, happy Venus return. As of the day of this recording, Venus has entered into Aries. Yes. The other card that came up is also, I feel like, a really liminal card. We have the Seven of Swords.
I hate that card too.
Me too. I hate this.
The two of them together, though. I'm like, really? Really?
Jeez. Like,
yeah.
I like the illustration on this card. We're using the Fifth Spirit Tarot today, and there's a magpie sitting on the edge of a nest. The magpie has like a pearl necklace in its beak. Inside the nest, there's all sorts of little shiny trinkets that it's probably taken and stolen and brought in, but the nest is almost made up of those seven swords. And the phrase that I use often when this card comes up is, why are you building your nest out of swords? Can't we find a more easeful way to exist and to create our life? But also, this is a card that has a lot to do with like deception. And I'm hearing in your story that there was so much that you didn't know about yourself and your lineage and that whole half of your family on your father's side as you were growing up.
Well, that and but also my mother's side's full of deception, you know, like, I mean, that just tracks on every level. I mean, when you're constantly the one who's breaking the third wall or the fifth wall with your family, the one who's constantly being like, why can't we tell the truth? You become the enemy, you know? And, you know, also like just, I grew up with criminals. I mean, like there was always deception. There was always violence. There was always fighting for, you don't even know what you're fighting for at that point, you know? And I was always the one to notice, particularly, and as a kid, you know, you don't know, like, you can't understand why. It took me a long time. It took me until, I would say, even my 30s, early 30s, to go, what this person telling me is not the opposite of what they feel. Like, I really like having to really recalibrate and like rewire yourself is in trusting my intuition. Even like though it's like, this is what I do for a living. I was very good at seeing the whole picture and seeing what people were hiding, for better or worse, you know, because there's a lot of people too that would, I could see their spirit, be people like, oh, why are you so nice to them? Or why are you kind? Or why are you this to them? And like, that person's not a monster. Like, so it would work in both ways, you know? And you had to be tough growing up. You had to be tough or else you would be wiped out. So it's comical, but also, and annoying. It's like Five of Wands and the Seven of Swords. Because I remember too, even a kid growing up, like, you're so lost. I think I was like 18. I was like, here's the thing though. I think about that and some of those people who also would like judge my directionlessness. And I see them now and they're a hot mess. And I'm like, you had to play it safe your whole, like, you got to. And that's fine. And I feel for you. But like, I would not want to be going through things now at this age, certain things, you know. Not to say it can't happen, but there's just a lot of stuff that I went through really young, that chaos and that not knowing, but like, all to find out, come back to who you are. It's a wild ride. I'm just hilarious, those two cards.
Like, yeah, it's not a fun combination by any means.
No, but I knew it was going to be a hard, you know, I have a lot of Saturn. I have heavy Saturn. I'm Saturn ruled. I have a hard Saturn placement. It's like opposing my ascendant. And I always knew too, it's like, you know, whenever I see that with anyone, I try to tell them like, yes, your earlier years were probably painful, but like your later life gets much better. It does. It really does. So if you are like someone who's heavily impacted by Saturn and it was really hard, like it is, there are things that are worth it if you can get through it, you know, that latter half of life just, I promise, is juicier, more nourishing. Your relationships are better. Everything is better in a different way.
Yeah, you really have to grow into those Saturn placements when you're a heavily Saturnian person, for sure. And can I ask, because I think it's really useful for younger people who are feeling lost to see examples of people who have survived. Can I ask how old you are?
Me? Oh, I'm 48. 48? I forget. Okay. I'm 48. Yeah. Like, I turned 48 in March. So
awesome. Awesome. Yeah. I just think that's good for folks to hear. Like, look, you can make it to 48. You can be doing cool things. You can be a badass. You still have a life.
You can change your mind. Mm-hmm. Like, I didn't start doing this work full time until like 33. Like, and I had no, I don't know. Like, I just think, and that's even changing now. So it's like, there's so many things that you can do and you haven't missed your mark. You haven't expired, you know, even when you're a person that's like, not sure if you're going to make it, like, you can. I think you just have to, again, staying curious was really, I think, key for me in a lot of things. What would it look like if I did this differently? And I think a lot of us forget that we're not, yes, we are kind of subject to our situation, but can you also give yourself, like, I don't know, an alt ending, or just say, like, can I try it as if I'm a person who can do this, you know? Can't lose just to try it.
I used to say, fake it till you feel it.
Yes.
Yeah, just fake it until you feel that that's a possibility for you. So you say
Sorry, go ahead.
So you say that your work is kind of changing and shifting right now. What does your work look like in the moment? Where is most of your energy and attention going to these days?
I mean, it's... I'm in such a liminal space right now. I was such a workaholic for, I don't know, since 2009 until like last year. In the sense of I had no, all I did was my readings full time. I was just constantly, constantly producing, teaching. I used to do, this was so long, I do live rituals at this monthly burlesque night in LA, because they would have a different person do it every month. And teaching, and I moved to Tucson in 2024, in basically March 1st. And I don't know, like everything started to pull back, dial back. And the parts of my life that were super underdeveloped or not taken care of or not watered, not nourished, started to get watered. And then the work started to kind of like it. So it's I've been trying to have like a hard look at like, what do I actually have to offer? What do I have to share that's not redundant and been there, done that? I like pulled back to also like share and shift and support the release of this book. And also over the summer, I worked on another project that's going to come out in February 2026 with one of my magician friends, Adam. He was one of the people. I went to Egypt in 2022 for Egyptian initiations, and we came out of that with some ideas. And so I got to work on that. And the longer I've been away from the, I can't, like, the one-on-ones, I'm not done per se being a reader, but I'm done being, this is the only thing I'm good for. So it's been interesting. I've also had a lot of kind of roadblocks being here. I'm so happy to be here. The road to being here was not ever on my like agenda. It wasn't something I looked for. Everything.
How did Tucson get on your radar?
So I was actually going, I was looking at moving back to Providence, Rhode Island, which is where I grew up. And I lived in LA for 18 years. And I had thought, and I also had a brief stint in New Mexico. So I thought, okay, I'm going to go back to Rhode Island, but nothing was opening up. And I was like, just, okay, whatever. I mean, I've got one last, like, maybe I'll do a little tour. Because one of the things that I love to do is travel and teach. And I teach a lot, like, around the country at different, some of my favorite magical shops and things like that. And it's always done really well for me to travel and teach. So I thought, okay, I haven't done a little Southwest tour since 2019 when Priestess came out, and it was really fun and I got to see a lot of people. Anyway, I posted on my Instagram like, hey, where should I pop up? And a friend of mine who actually lives here in Tucson was like, you jerk, come visit me. I've been trying to get you to visit me for 2 years. And I said, okay, I'll do that. And then I found out another friend of mine had moved back here, who is from here. And I reached out to them and I was like, hey, I'm going to come through. Is there anything I should check out? Like I should see? She's like, oh my God, come do an event here. Like teach, do a meditation, do a whatever. I said, okay. And I don't know, like within 3 hours after I pulled up being here, she was like, I turned out I was going to rent her house. And then the next day it was like, oh, I like randomly like, she was like, let's go into this. I'm really, really wanting to go into this like occult bookstore. And she's like, but I've been too nervous, right? Because her and I are both autistic. We both like don't do stuff a lot of the time. Like, you know, I was like, okay. And then we walked in and everyone was so nice. It was like, you know, Andrew, the owner there, and was like, blah, 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 talking to us. And before we left, he came over and I was a consultant and I wrote an essay for the Tashin Tarot book. So he had come over and was like, would you sign this? And I said, oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah, sure. And then when I left, like, you know, they had reached out and said, like, hey, if you're ever in town, Anyway, it's just kind of like, and the next thing I was like, I think I'm moving here. I think I'm moving here. This is bizarre. And then my friend's like, I got offered three places to live. And I got offered a place to kind of, if I wanted to do an event. And I was like, okay, like I'm getting kind of pushed into that direction. And then nothing was opening in Providence. And I really believe in that. Like even when I moved to LA, everything in Los Angeles, years, it would just be like, nope, be here, be here. Here's an opportunity. Here's a door. Here's a this. Even when I left to go to New Mexico, I went back and they're like, here's an apartment. Like it was never a struggle until it wasn't time to be there anymore. So I'm just like following this thread. But being here has taught me that like I can't live the way I lived in Los Angeles and live here and then be in harmony. And then also, you know, whether you edit this out or not, I don't care. I'm like, I just like, I don't really feel a sense of community. And I get it, you know, I've had some people be like, oh, you moved from LA, you're trying to take over and like weird stuff. And I'm like, I'm actually, I'm not. Like, I'm just like, you know,
The
and
spiritual
that's
community
fine.
here is really territorial a lot of times,
Yes.
is something that I've
Oh, yeah.
found. And of course, I want to mention that we're of course talking about Andrew at Nexus Occult Books and
Yes.
Oddities, and his episode of the podcast was so much fun. You'll see the same beautiful Marcella Kroll sign behind Andrew in his episode. I'm so glad that he was there to welcome you
Yeah.
in. Because there is a lot about Tucson, if you find the right spaces, that is deeply welcoming. We want people
Yeah.
who love it here to come here, but the spiritual community has a lot of nasty undercurrents, especially at the moment.
Yeah, and I was kind of warned by a couple of curanderismo friends of mine, like, you know, and I was like, really? Like, you know, kind of naively thinking, like, really, are people gonna be really like come on, like that petty? And then I've witnessed it, I've had it experienced it. I've gone into a couple places and people are like and then I've had other places, you know, people have been nice to me, but I will say by far my most positive experiences was with Nexus. And I felt like, okay, like I can, you know, do my thing. And then I don't know, I've just had a lot of like, I know that my guides and guidance want me to shift into a different direction. They don't want me to quit, which is different. I think sometimes also we sometimes when we need to take a break and pause, we think we need to quit. And I don't think that's the key. I think it's reassessing. And I don't, I can't be like a TikTok reader, which is fine for some people, but like there's just this different shift in information and how we hold space. And I really pride myself on being a person that I like to empower other people to find their unique way of doing things. So I do like, even in my classes or my books or even my decks, a lot of this is about giving you the key and you drive it however you want. It's not about doing it my way. It's not about being like, oh, you have to do it this, and this. It's like, no. I even have people like, oh, I pulled this upside down. I'm like, and? Like, what does that mean? Does that mean something to you? Because it doesn't, it's not what I think. It's you are the interpreter, you are the guide, you are the vessel. And I think that that's, you know, but I know that also my work is being asked to kind of up level. Like, okay, you need to like, what's your next step? You know, is it, are you gonna, and I just don't, I can't work like the way I used to. I'm in that workaholic. I'm gonna just do like, I'm gonna do like 15 or 20 readings a week. No, like I can't do it. And also in that, in this economy, like, that everybody thought COVID would be really bad. Like for me, COVID was like probably my busiest time. I made Lily's Walk, the Dreamer's Tarot, and I was booked and busy like every day. And for me, the I would say where I started to notice the shift economically was First with like the writer strike, the SAG and the WGA. And because a lot of my clients are in film and television. And then obviously with the current administration and all that stuff, this is where I've seen a huge shift in how people and what they want and the differences in, like, again, you know, people's actual intentions with spirituality and what they want. I also think Neptune moving into Aries is going to also, like, we had Neptune in Pisces for so long, and that was really amazing for, you know, the metaphysical kind of occult community. But Neptune into Aries is going to weed out, I think, a lot of the people who are kind of here for the wrong reasons or that are not able to shift with the times. So,
yeah, I hear that. Yeah. I hear that. I feel that a lot. Absolutely. Yeah, COVID was a very easy time to be a tarot reader, honestly, in my experience. That was, so I had been working with tarot personally for a very long time prior to that, but it was when COVID happened. I was working as a topless dancer at the time. The club shut down. I had just started to share more of my practice publicly and had just started offering readings to other folks. And yeah, tarot is what, like, as a survival tool, floated me through the pandemic. And people were really eager and ready for that kind of experience as a client.
Yeah. And people just generally, don't you think, like, people, when they're seeking, they will reach to everything, you know,
for better or for worse.
And that's for better or worse. Yeah. And so that's why, you know, there's this beautiful surgence of also, like, new practitioners and things. But I also think that the demand and the, you know, the want for things to be on demand is what's killing kind of, like, the, you know, the Oracle in a way. The Oracles of Delphi, like, aren't going to say, you know, Betty Boop is going to contact you in 3 days and, you know, show you the way and pay attention to these 8 random things and stop scrolling. I have something to tell you.
The TikTok tarot, like, readers.
I mean, I love it. It's great. You know,
it's
like,
cool,
I think it's
seeing
great.
It's cool in a way. And
yeah. And
how useful is that message on individual levels?
Right. Well, and then you have, but the people who are booking privates with people and expecting those same hand-fed experiences and then being upset about it, you know, like, if it's not true, whereas with the stuff they can just scroll away. So it's just an interesting time. It's going to be interesting to see. And it's not that I think, again, like, I've been doing this a long time. Like, I don't think I'm done. I just think that I'm being more discerning, more selective about who I share my energy with right now, though, too. I cannot be available for everybody. And that's okay. So I'm in this shift right now of, like, the next project I'm working on. Well, we've already finished it with my friend Adam. We made an Initiates Oracle. It's a deck for magicians by magicians. And it's going to be different from me because it's, like, a lot of my work is very, like, I would say it's accessible in that it's digestible. And it's, some people are like, oh, it's simple. I'm like, well, sometimes it's just about clear communication. I don't like the fluffy, over-expressive, whatever. But this is different. I got to nerd out on a lot of magic stuff. And, you know, and it's for those who want to take things to the next level. So I think, you know, tools by magicians for magicians, essentially. Like, that's what we need. Not just, yes, there needs to be entry points for people who don't really understand, but there's going to have to be this next level of, like, are we still going to be talking about the same old tired, like, whatever? Like, I love and respect, like, the hermetics. I love and respect all the, you know, practical traditions. But like, again, there's evolution that has to happen here. Right. You know, so I don't know. I'm just, if that's, I'm going to try. Might as well. I'm here.
Yeah, there's a lot of entry points for beginners, and there needs to be evolution points as well, and places for people to take that and for people to go. And I'm hearing so much of what you're saying right now reflected in one of the cards that's come up for your present work, which is the Queen of Swords. We have the Queen of Swords coming up, cutting through a little bit of the bullshit, helping you to kind of guide and align, getting really focused. I always think of aligning the heart and the head when the Queen of Swords comes up. And then the card that, well, I'll stay on the Queen of Swords for a minute. A lot of being a educator and leader, that is, like you said, giving folks just the keys, giving you all of the information, providing a kind of space, a platform for people to, just thinking about what you've been talking about recently with some potential like past life classes, giving people the framework to allow them to play and figure out what works for them within that. And you're just establishing that framework.
Yes, because that's the thing. It's like, I can do past life, like healing meditations and all that stuff. And that's like lovely, you know, to be able to do. But we need, you know, more facilitators. Like, I know there are more people that want to like be able to hold space in this way. And not just because they want to make money, but just because they need to learn how to hold space. And I think that's important. So, you know, that's why I've started wanting to like do more of these kind of frameworks or educations. And I'll tell people like, this is not a certification. It's, I'm just showing you like what has worked and what has not worked for me. And there are, you know, I've talked about this a bunch, but I mean, like there are a lot of young people who want to be treated like elders, but they don't have the life experience or the, you know, bedside manner to know what to do in certain situations and learn from my mistakes, learn where I've had to learn. Not every situation is a flat line. You know, you're going to deal with like whack-a-mole or situations where things pop up when you're facilitating. And that's just as important as sharing the knowledge, is how do you handle the energy and the situation in the room? You know, because I see a lot of people quit this work, or they leave, or they do something and then they feel like they can't come back from it, you know, instead of accepting their humanity and going, wait, okay, this might also be something to be aware of. It might come up. How do you redirect? It's just like having tools, you know, do you have resources when things come up? Because you're not going to know everything all the time. You know, I refer people to other people all the time because I don't know.
I would love if I could speak directly to, you know, those folks that I also see where young people are wanting to be elders way before their time. And I hope as a young person, I'm still very young. I'm just coming out of my Saturn return, barely an adult, but who is also trying to, in some ways, I'm very Aries ruled. So in some ways, working to be a leader, but knowing that I am not an elder, I would hope that those folks could see and understand that that is a process, and you can actively and consciously choose to step onto that path, knowing that that is your goal and that that requires time. My midheaven is in Capricorn, and so I've for a long time I've always thought like, man, I just can't wait. I'm so excited to be at a point where I can say I have 20 years of experience in this. But you don't get that overnight. You have to experience the 20 years, and there's going to be a lot of ups and downs.
Yeah. And the other thing, you might get to that point and change your mind. Like, I think that's the other thing. Like, yes, you can be knowledgeable and refined, but like nothing is going to give you more time than time. And you know, and sometimes you might get to what you think you wanted. You finally reach that goal and you get there and you're like, wait, what was the point? What was I doing? Why did I want so badly to be an expert at this? Even people now, like, they're like, oh, I want you to talk on this. I'm like, I don't know. I'm not an expert. And they're like, you've been doing it for so long. I'm like, okay, I can say I've lived experience. I'm never going to be an expert. I'm going to be a person who has lived experience. I'm going to be a person who's done it for a while, but I'm still always learning. And I think that's just like, you know, I don't know. I also have my own humanity in here where my own imposter syndrome comes up that I have to contend with. And I'll tell you, like, it doesn't go away. How you respond, though, and the more you engage, like, there are days where I go, I'm constantly quitting my, like, work. And then, like, I'll have a moment where it's literally a conversation with one person or just a random thing. I'll be like, this is why I do what I do. It has nothing to do with the accolades of my peers. My peers actually are my ops. They're my critics. They're not my supporters.
I need a hat embroidered with my peers are my ops.
Yeah.
Amen like, to that. The other card that came up, I heard you give like a perfect sentence to this. When we first started talking about how you landed in Tucson, you said, you know, I started nourishing and watering things that hadn't been for a while and that needed it. And we have the Five of Cups coming up. So another five, but a little gentler this time. And thinking about that pause moment that you're in at this moment, the like, okay, let's pause and reassess. It's something that I think we resist a lot because of capitalism. Capitalism says you always have to keep moving forward. You always have to keep striving for the next best thing. You always have to be climbing the ladder. But as we know, that potential for change and shifting and evolution or shifting into what's going to be in most alignment in the given moment has to come from that moment to, again, pause and allow for the internal shift. I see this a lot as the internal shift that then allows for the external to kind of rearrange itself to be in more alignment at the given moment.
Yeah, that's, I mean, I'm like, way to go to be on a podcast when you're in a midlife crisis, right? Like I am, I just turned 48 and I'm approaching my Chiron return, even though like Chiron, it kind of hits you around 50. I have a stellium in the house that it's hit. So it's hitting all these things before it hits my actual 29 degree Chiron in Aries.
What a degree.
And I'm a 29 degree Pisces. So oh. I've had Neptune on my sun for a while. You know, like it's just been a lot going on.
So you have an Aries stellium then. Is that what you're saying?
Yes. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What a time.
There's huge identity changes right now. And it's funny with that five, I've literally been like grieving this person that I worked really hard to be, but also needing to completely let them go. And it's goddamn infuriating because how do you reconcile building something from nothing and being told on a spiritual level, now you got to walk away from it all? If you don't walk away from it all, someone's going to come into the house and take it all. And you have to decide, do you follow the dog like on the floor? Like, do you take the leap, even though that dog doesn't know where it's going, and abandon everything that you've built for destination unknown, but you know it feels better than being, I call it like, if there's been a zombie apocalypse coming and you know, you're laying down and just dying. Like
waiting. I'm hearing you describe judgment, yeah. The judgment card. You're hearing that call, having to to transcend. And can you get to the world or do you stay in the tomb?
Right. And the thing is it's like, it's been really like eye-opening to go, you're not going to reach whatever award, medal, or accolade that you thought you would get by getting this. Like, even though you did all the work, There's no ribbon, there's no sticker, there's no like accolade, good job. And but that's been my whole life, you know, seeing people like I could be doing this work for a long time, and then someone comes up and they've been doing it for a few years, and then they're getting all the press, they're getting all the things, and they're getting all the acknowledgement. And you know what you get? You get a DM that says, you inspired me so much, but I will not acknowledge, like, but then they don't acknowledge you publicly. Do you know what I'm saying? Like, it's like,
I do.
This, yeah, there's an element of this where I understand how I can sound resentful in it, but I'm not allowed to. You have to go figure out what's next because you're part of building this new reality. And that's where I'm going. So that Five of Cups, there's so much bittersweetness. There's so much disappointment, but also there's still hope because like it's like, okay, well, I have to go find the next thing because this isn't for me anymore. Even though I made all this stuff happen, even though like, and you have to reconcile that within yourself. And it's a lot of grief. And that's where I'm at. And I haven't said that out loud to anybody, you know, except for my partner. So thanks for letting me say that out loud. Because I haven't been able to articulate it, you know. And I know there are things on the horizon. And I know I'm not quitting. But the old model, the old structure isn't going to continue working. And I feel, because there's a lot of people who are chasing this model of, oh, you got to do this. You got to get online. You got to do that. You got to do all this. I'm like, I don't know if that's going to be the way to do it. So it's going to be an interesting, you know, especially the next few years as Neptune and, you know, and then Saturn goes into Aries as well.
Every outer planet is changing signs and the entire paradigm is shifting. That's what it feels like to me.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And Pluto in Aquarius, you know.
Oh, you don't have to tell me about Pluto in Aquarius.
Physical exhaustion.
Yes, a lot of agitating for change. And I'm hearing a lot, I'm relating a lot to what you're saying, especially Aries to Aries, there can be, I think with the cardinal signs, we get things started, you know, it's the initiators. And those who start it, we don't often get to be the ones who then are like you said, getting all the accolades or like reaching the peak or being the ones to quote unquote perfect it. It's those who come in afterwards. And by the time that peak is happening, by the time that, you know, everyone else is jumping on, we're then being pushed to go start the next thing. Yeah, getting pushed out. Yeah. Exactly. And, you know, then we go start the next thing. And it feels really thankless a lot of the times.
It does. It does. I mean, it is thankless a lot of the time. Or you get like told like 5 years later when you finally you finally feel better about it. And then someone says something, you're like, great, thanks. But I don't know. I also have Aquarius rising, so I'm such a contrarian with things too, like in that way of like, well, you want me to do it? I don't want to do it. I don't want to do it. I want to do something else.
And a trendsetter. You know?
But I'm just like such a brat about things. Like, you know, and then the Pisces is like, you know, I get annoyed with myself. But I also know that like, even if I was invited, I'd be like, I don't want to be there. I think it's just like the respect or the acknowledgement goes so much further with me than the ignoring or dismissal. Like, I'm super easy to please. I'm like, just say please. So say thanks. Just say, I don't know, like also autistic. I have a hard time with the like, saying one thing and doing another or being vague and walking around or talking around things. And it can be very, that can be off-putting for some people, for sure. I've definitely like, that was a big, that I'm learning a lot. Like I pissed off a lot of people for years just because people thought I was mean or just not emotionally connected.
you know.
But like Queen of Swords is like, I'm having to kind of bring her out now. And I've had to bring her out at different points in my life because I've had no boundaries, or I've been a bleeding heart, or I've not taken care of myself in the process of taking care of other people. And when they're like, leave you in the dust, I've been just with myself again. So that Queen of Swords has had to come up again in my life as I make this huge transition out of my Los Angeles life and into my work in a different way.
And I do want to say thank you for sharing some of this journey, because it is tough to be in one of those transitional phases and not have the like, oh yeah, and this is exactly what I'm doing right now and my goal, and this is my current project, and go sign up for it. It can feel very vulnerable to share when we're in that transition period. So I just really like honor and am humbled that you would share that in our conversation. So thank you again for being here.
Thank you.
I think the Queen of Swords could be an autistic woman icon.
Absolutely. I love that for her. I love that. Yeah. And I think it's also to remember to people that like not knowing what's next necessarily doesn't mean you just disappear from existence. It's like the thing I have to remind myself even with my creativity. And it's like, yeah, I might be people like, oh, you're so prolific, you're doing all these things. I'm like, you don't see the 8 months of me agonizing because nothing will come out of my brain. I mean, literally, like healing the liminal, when I wrote it, 50,000 words in 51 days, but I agonized for 8 months because I could not get a single word out. I had no concept. I had no idea what was going to happen. And all I knew in my intuitive self just kept being like, you're not going to write before you go to Egypt. You're not going to go write before you go to Egypt. And I was like, how am I not going to write? My fucking manuscript is due January 15th. And I was like, I just need to reach out and ask them. I was like, can I ask for an extension till March 1st? They're like, sure. And I was like, okay, that still only gets me like a couple months. But literally, my intuition knew. It was like, you're not going to write before then. I did not write the first story until I was in Egypt and I was on the Nile. The first story came to me, and that's how the whole concept of how the book would be written, because a lot of the book is channeled. The stories are channeled. So the first story I wrote is in the back of the book, in the blurred timeline section, Ysidro, which is a past life story. I wrote that, basically recorded myself on the Nile talking, channeling the story. And then when I was done, I went, this is how I'm writing this book. So when I came back, I was up every night because of like jet lag and all those things. And I was up like 3 o'clock, 4 o'clock in the morning. And I was just like channeling and recording myself. And then I put the book together. That's what I'm saying. So it's like the same thing with this work. Sometimes we're in these really long birth canals or these really long gestation periods. And because other people are busy or because other people have a way of working, like even my partner is very logical, very analytical, very earthy, very like, I can put pressure on myself to go, oh my God, I'm such a loser. What am I doing? Like, and they'll ask me like, are you going to do this? I'm like, I don't know. And then I go into existential crisis. But then I have to go, okay, a week, 2 weeks later, or even like 11th hour, I'll get like a reminder of like, you're going to be okay. And I've said it before, and I will say it again here. Magic has never let me down. And I really believe that. Like, if you really believe that, and you are a person that does not work in the analytical brain, if you have to trust your own circadian rhythm. As my dog barks. Like, if you can trust your own circadian rhythm, and I know it's harder it's easier to say than do. But try to surround yourself with people who get it. Try to surround yourself with people who can be supportive, that you are not going to be necessarily a 9-to-5-er
or a person that operates on particular deadlines. It's going to make your life easier. But I think that's a big part of me, like, almost being ejected out of LA was I was working in a structure and an economy that actually cannot support me as a human. And that's, I think, what a lot of people are learning right now. Not just psychics or healers. I think a lot of people are like, wait a minute. This is not sustainable. So where do we go from here? You know, there are going to be these people like, you know, Neptune and Aries. It's time to figure out a new start, a new jumping off cliff point, which is terrifying. But this is where I am grateful for the Aries in my, you know, like, to help me continue exploring, in even if it's scary.
And where do we go from here? As I'm looking at the cards now that I have all of them flipped over and laid out, it feels to me like you're still going to be in that incubation period for for a little while longer. Oh, yeah. But we do have really beautiful cards coming up in the future position. So we have the Four of Wands, stabilizing some of that fire from the initial Five of Wands. And we have the Three of Cups, providing a little bit of a balm to that grief of the Five of Cups. I love both of these cards. Are some of my favorites in the Minor Arcana. They're so comforting.
I love that.
Community is coming back for you. You're going to be ready for community again, even if the Tucson space wasn't necessarily where that was going to happen. This was clearly a great kind of incubator for you in terms of getting some other work out.
Yeah, and I think it's also important. Like, I really made a big kind of, like, just like an acceptance kind of moment for myself, where I was like, okay, maybe this is home, absolutely, because I've never felt more at home. But maybe this isn't necessarily where my work is.
Yes.
And, you know, and because I'm a person, like I said, I travel, I teach, I do all these things. And, you know, in other places, like, I've really beautiful communities, but they're not necessarily where I live. I've listened to a couple of the episodes that you put out. And one of the, I know you mentioned Denver, like, Denver Ritual Craft's one of my big communities. I go there and teach often. I have really dear friends that live and work, you know, remotely, or like, you know, not just there, but like all over, like, you know. And I have things on the horizon, but again, they're all like early 2026. So I'm not sure what the rest of this year brings. I keep trying to throw lines out for things here, and nothing's really sticking. And I'm just trying to trust that. I will say, though, one of the things that I'm most proud of that I've allowed myself to step into more was more of a hands-on community offering, where I do AccuDetox. So I will say that I have AccuDetox. I'm trying to host more of those, like, group by donation offerings. AccuDetox, if you don't know, is a 5-point needle, the NADA protocol. It's to help with stress, and for those suffering and detoxing, but also for just general mindfulness. And it started through activism in the 70s. It started through the Young Lords and the Black Panthers as a means of getting, like, healing into the community's hands. So I'm going to be hosting, like, a by donation clinic on May 10th at Nexus. And I'm going to continue to do things that help me connect with people. Like I said, I'm just trusting that this weird liminal process is going to spit me out into, or inspire, this new direction in a way that's perhaps bigger than I can see at the moment. So I think that's like the only thing that I can think of that's like on my upcoming.
Yeah.
In the near future.
And that is really kind of bringing folks together in this community space to stabilize some of our inner fire with that AccuDetox protocol, which I've been so excited to see that you're offering that. I used to work for an acupuncturist here in town, and It was while I was doing that work that I learned about the connection between the Black Panthers and the rise of and popularity of acupuncture here in the United States, which is such a cool history, and it's so useful and so beneficial. So I'm happy to see community acupuncture being proliferated throughout our community.
Yeah, I mean, it was very like something I actually lost a friend who relapsed, and it was one of those things that I was like, I wish I had these tools, you know, and what's really kind of unexpected and unanticipated with the whole process is not that anybody's asking for it, but like I started being able to like scry with the ear points, like when I started noticing things. And the beauty of the thing is with the acupuncture too, is like, you don't have to talk, but it might help you start talking or help you feel certain things that you've been avoiding feeling or didn't feel comfortable or, you know, perfectly honest to feel safe expressing. But it was really wild when I started noticing things in the ears that I could tell, like, and then the person would start talking or we'd start chatting and it would kind of like, not say validate, but like kind of clarify maybe something they had going on, you know, or help just some of that. Like, so it's really trippy, like the process. And I, you know, and not to toot my own horn, but I'm good with the needles. Like if that's what my gift is right now to community versus a reading, like if I can help you feel and connect to yourself in that way through the Accu detox, then great. I just like, I'm just trying to trust this washing machine of life.
Awesome. Well, Marcella, this has been such a joy of a conversation. I'll say I'm honored and humbled that you would come sit down and share some of your journey with me. Before I ask where people can find you, I would like to tell the listeners that I was able to listen to the audiobook of Healing the Liminal through the Pima County Library. So if you have a library card, that is easily available to you. You, of course, can also pick up a physical copy. I'm going to assume that Andrew has some on hand at Nexus down on Speedway in Tucson, Arizona. And then check your local bookstores, look online. It's a really beautiful and compelling story. Set of stories. My favorite story, for those who do end up listening and reading, you can think of me when you go through the dragon story, because I think that was my favorite.
Yes. You know, my grandfather I'm talking about in that book, he was an Aries.
Oh, gosh.
I found that out after. Oh, but also I will be teaching. So Healing the Liminal also kind of it developed out of the idea of the book developed out of an actual class that I teach, like a workshop. So I am going to be offering that in Los Angeles as a 2-day workshop in September 20th and 21st at the Philosophical Research Society. I almost forgot. It's like, but that's in Los Angeles. The Philosophical Research Society is amazing. If you haven't been, it was founded by Manly P. Hall, who wrote The Secret Teaching of All Ages. And yeah, they do a whole lot of events and things there. So that is going to be in September.
Incredible. And where can folks find more information about that or more information about you and your work?
My website is marcellacroll.com. And then my Instagram is at marcellacroll. I have a TikTok, but honestly, it's more for goofs. Like, I don't really do much on there. You know, I post a lot of like lizard or pug content, for people who like animals.
That's how those are my familiars. My TikTok too. It's just yeah. Like shit posting on TikTok and anything exactly. actually serious goes on Instagram. Me and the 200 people that watch my TikToks have a fun time over there.
Right. Exactly. Like, what are we looking at? Like, yeah, so those are the best ways to reach me. Honestly, you know, with my website, my newsletter, the little pop-up thing will come up. I don't spam your inbox, but if you do want to keep up with me, I think signing up for the newsletter, it's the easiest way to do it, and it's free.
Heck yeah, we love that. I always encourage people to sign the newsletter because you might miss something on socials. Zuck might take our ability to communicate away, but email is more or less reliable.
Yes.
Awesome. Well, thank you again. I hope you have a wonderful day, Marcella. To the listeners who are listening to this conversation, there, all of those links will be in the show notes. I hope you all have wonderful, beautiful days. And as always, happy shuffling.